In the name of God, this is a great pleasure for me to be here, and I'm very pleased to have this great opportunity to be among you and have the chance to talk about some of the important issues in the field of philosophy and theology. The title of my talk, as you may know, is about the meaning of life and the concept of happiness, as Ms. Rosefat mentioned. Probably the question of meaning of life is one of the oldest and long-lasting questions in the history of human beings, and it has to be like that. Any time you take a step back and you look at your life as a whole and reflect upon your life as a whole, inevitably you have to ask the question of meaning of life. What is it all about? What is the purpose of my life? What is the point of all these different activities I'm engaged in? And this is a very important question, and I said it is one of the oldest questions in the history of human beings, and it is extremely crucial to human beings to find a way to deal with this very important question. As I said, in many different cultures, they have different ways to approach this question. And I like to mention one of the oldest stories in the history of human beings which address this important question in terms of a metaphor. This story, I took this story from Kelele and Demne. Kelele Demne is a classic in Iranian Persian, and this story probably comes from Indian culture. This story, it's a story of a traveler who, according to Kelele Demne, he was chased by a wild beast, and the guy wanted to escape, so the only way he could have escaped from the threat of that wild beast was to jump into a waterless well, trying to save himself. But at the bottom of the well, there was a dragon, and he opened its jaws in order to swallow this traveler. Of course, he couldn't get out of the well anymore because he was, you know, inside the well, and he felt the threat of, because of the threat of that beast, and he didn't dare to jump down to the bottom of the well because of the dragon at the bottom of the well. So he clutches the twig of a wild brush growing in the cleft of the well and holds on to it. But, you know, as you may expect, he grew weak and weak, and he felt that sooner or later he has to give up, and, you know, the threat of dragon is there, it's waiting for him. But that was not the end of the story, because at the same time he noticed that two mice, they were chewing that trunk of the branch he was hanging on. And so you can imagine the situation would be more tragic by, you know, having those mice in the scene. So at any moment the bush will break and tear off, and he will fall into the dragon's jaw. So you can see it's a very tragic, very difficult situation. But meanwhile, the traveler sees a few drops of honey hanging on the leaves of that bush, that tree. And he forgets all about the tragic, that difficult situation, and he starts tasting that few drops of honey. Now, the people who told this story, they said, look, contemplate, reflect upon this story for a second and see If you look at carefully, if you examine the story more carefully, you will see this is the story of human beings in this world. This is the story of human beings in this world. And they try to explain the symbols included in this story. According to the storyteller, this is the traveler is human beings, all of us in this world. And we had to come in the well, this waterless well of the world. This well is a symbol of the world we are living in. And what is the dragon at the bottom of the well? It is death, which is waiting for us, right? So, and what are those mice? Day and night, right? And because of them, sooner or later, you know, this threat of, you know, that branch of bush would turn off, and we fall into the jaws of dragon. So as we can see, it's an extremely difficult situation, and it is portrayed in this story. And what are those few drops of honey? According to the storytellers, these few drops of honey, they are nothing but, you know, the pleasures you can get and you get from everyday activities. The pleasure you can get from living in this world. It seems obvious to the storyteller what the traveler did in that extremely difficult situation was unreasonable, was irrational. Why? Because if you are in such a difficult situation, you have to do your best to find a way to escape from that difficult situation. But instead of doing that, you forget all about this difficult situation, and you try to, you get, it seems extremely unreasonable to forget all about this difficult situation and start tasting those few drops of honey. Doing that seems extremely unreasonable. And according to the storyteller, that's exactly what we are doing in this world. We completely forget all about the difficult situation we are in, and we are engaged in everyday life. We take everyday life too seriously, and we forget all about the dragon which is waiting at the bottom of that well. And they say, in this difficult situation, you have to ask if the death is waiting for me. What am I doing in this world? What am I doing? When you, for example, go to work, when you raise a family, when you try your best to make a progress in your everyday life, when you get pleasure from different aspects of this world. But if death is there, and sooner or later you are going to die, and everything you acquired in this world is going to be perished, then what is the point of it? What is the point of it? When you get involved in this kind of, you know, trivial pleasures of the world, in fact you are ignoring the difficult, the tragic situation you are in this world, in this universe. So it seems to people in India, ancient India, or people in Iran, the fact of death put a very important question mark on human's life. You have to ask about the meaning of life. You have to ask about the meaning of what you're doing in this world. The meaning of all activities you are engaged in this world, and see whether or not, assuming the fact of death in this world, whether or not what you're doing makes any sense. So this is a big question, and we want to know what would be the answer to this question. Most definitely, I'm not going to give you the answer to this question, the question of meaning of life, for a very simple reason. I don't know it. And most importantly, every individual has to find the meaning of his or her own life individually. It doesn't... I believe probably what makes meaning to my life, what creates meaning in my life, it is not necessarily what might give meaning to your life. Probably every individual, as I will explain in a moment, she or he has to find the meaning of his or her life individually, separately. But I'm to discuss two important questions, and then, of course, I invite you to participate in this discussion. The first question I like to address and invite you to think about it is the under what condition we may consider human's life as meaningful? When, under what condition, the kind of life that we are conducting in this world can be considered as a meaningful life? That's the first question I'd like to address. What are the necessary conditions for having a meaningful life? That's first. The second question I'd like to address is this. What is the relation between the question of meaning of life, between meaning of life and what you might call happiness, human's happiness? Whether or not there is a close connection between the meaning of life, human's life, and the meaning and happiness, human's happiness. Whether or not having a meaningful life guarantees human's happiness, or whether or not conducting a happy life is enough for having a meaningful life. So that's the second question I'm going to address. As I said, the question of meaning of life, we take the question of meaning of life when you take a step back and you can look at your life from outside and you look at your life as a whole. In other words, people who are too engaged in everyday life, in everyday activity, they do not have any chance to take the question of meaning of life seriously. You have to contemplate, you have to reflect upon your life. And as I said, you need to take a step back. And then when you consider your life as a whole, the meaning of your life becomes crucial, becomes serious to you. So asking about the meaning of life, the question of meaning of life requires you to be more sophisticated, to take your life as a whole more seriously. And I said, for a moment at least, forget about everyday activity, try to disengage yourself from everyday activity and look at your life from outside. This is a crucial step you need to take in order to consider the question of your life seriously. When you take that move, of course, immediately you ask yourself, what is the point of what I'm doing in my life? At some point we were born and, you know, we grew up, we went to school, we went to college, and then we found a job, we raise a family, and we raise our kids, you know, and again our kids go to the college, they create, they build their own families, and then we will get old, and after a while, you know, death, right? And the same will happen to our kids, and the same will happen to their kids, and the same will happen to their kids. It seems to be a repetitive, pointless, endless toil. What is the point of it? In order to know what are the conditions for having a meaningful life, probably the best question to ask is, what is a meaningless life? under what conditions we consider a life as meaningless. Probably one of the most important pictures of having a meaningless life, you can find it in Greek culture. The myth of Sisyphus. I'm sure you all heard of that Greek. It's a part of Greek mythology. That's the story. According to Greeks, Sisyphus was condemned by the gods. And the punishment was this. He had to roll a stone to the top of a hill. And as soon as he gets to the top of the hill, the stone rolled back down, and Sisyphus has to do it again, push the stone to the top of the hill as soon as the hill, as soon as he gets there, the stone rolls back down, and again he has to do it again, and it goes forever, throughout eternity, endless torture for this guy. To many people, that's a clear example of having a meaningless life. And so people said, we can see intuitively, we can feel, and we can consider this life as a meaningless life. But what is the source of meaninglessness in this picture? What is the thing that makes this life meaningless? If you look at this picture more carefully, you will see there are at least two important elements in this picture that makes this situation a clear case of meaninglessness. I believe one of the most important features of this life is lack of purpose. What Sisyphus was doing in this story has no purpose. He does not accomplish anything, right? He rolls this stone to the top of the hill. For what? For nothing, right? He is not going to accomplish anything in this story. The lack of purpose is important. It is one of the important elements that makes a life meaningless. Remember, it is important, even in everyday language, when you use the concept of meaning, most of the time by the concept of meaning, we mean purpose. For example, when I wave my hand, you may ask, what does it mean? In other words, why did you do that? And in order to explain the meaning of this move, and in order to explain why I did that, to make sense of that action, I have to give you the purpose of my action. I say just, I wanted to say bye, for example. I wanted to say goodbye. When I give you the purpose of my action, now you know why I did it. Now you know what was the meaning of my move, right? When we talk about the meaning of life, by meaning we mean something like that. We want to know what is the purpose of life. And of course, as you can see in the life, in the Sisyphus life, if the life has no purpose, most likely we have to consider that life as a meaningless life. But it is not the end of the story. Having the purpose by itself is not enough to give meaning to human's life. One thing, you have to add something else to the picture. What that might be. Having any kind of purpose, as I said, cannot give a human's life meaning. Let me give you another example. Imagine an ideal rich person. Let's call it Ms. PH. Ms. PH is a very rich girl. And the main purpose of her life is, you know, to have fun, have, you know, go parties, and, you know, spend money for, you know, clothes, shopping, you know, go to very expensive restaurants. She has a personal trainer, you know, she works out, and that's all she does, you know. she gets bored, and in order to avoid that, boredom, so that's all she does in her life is, do these kind of activities. This is a purpose, right? She has a purpose for her life. But I doubt if you consider this kind of purpose, the kind of purpose that renders, that gives meaning to anybody's life. So having purpose by itself is not enough. That purpose must be objectively good, must be objectively valuable. So as you can see, the second important element in Sisyphus' life is lack of objective value. Sisyphus has done nothing valuable. The result of his activities is close to nothing. Nothing valuable comes out of what he is doing, right? And so, you can imagine this life, since it is purposeless and it does not have any valuable, any objective value in it, so we can understand that could be the second source of meaninglessness of his life. But still, this is not the end of the story. The third important element of the meaningless life is something else. Suppose we change the story a little bit. This time, imagine Sisyphus has a purpose. He is rolling these stones to the top of the hill in order to build a very beautiful temple. Right? That's the purpose. And the purpose is, presumably, it's a valuable one. In other words, suppose the temple is extremely beautiful, not only to his eyes, but, anybody who sees the temple admires the beauty of the temple. So, building that temple is objectively valuable. Now, if you add these two elements to the story of Sisyphus, now he has a purpose, and that purpose has objective value. But now imagine he is doing that under influence of some sort of drug. Unknowingly, without his knowledge, we injected a kind of drug, in his body, and under influence of the drug, Sisyphus is doing what he is doing. He hasn't chosen that purpose. He did not own it. This is not his own decision. He's not doing that knowingly and willingly. He is accomplishing that purpose, but this is not his purpose, right? We impose that purpose upon him, and he is doing it like a robot, right? So again, I think if that's the story, you have to say, even if he is doing something extremely valuable, his life is not meaningful. Because in order to have a meaningful life, you have to own it. It must be your decision. It must be your choice. And knowingly and willingly, you have to accomplish that purpose. In other words, a meaningful life, as some philosophers put it, it's a creative life. You cannot have a meaningful life unless you are a creative person. You can actively, knowingly, creatively, you must become engaged in your life and create that valuable purpose in your life. In other words, having a meaningful life is like writing a great piece of novel, creating a piece of life, a piece of art. Every individual's life is like a piece of art. You have to consider yourself as the author of your life. Your life is a novel, and you are a novelist. If you are creative enough, you can create a beautiful, extremely astonishing, you know, story as your life. And if you're not creative, if you're careless, of course the result wouldn't be satisfying. In other words, every move you make, every decision you make, everything you do in your life, these are words, these are sentences in that novel. And if you are creative enough, you can create a beautiful, objectively beautiful piece of art as your life. So, conducting a meaningful life, it's like creating a piece of art. And as I said, to the extent that you are creative, to the extent that you are the one who made the decision and to make right decisions, to that extent you can create a beautiful piece of art as your life. So, I would like to say the second important element of having a meaningless life is you are following the purpose which is not yours. People's, media, you know, others, they impose that purpose upon you. You haven't reflected carefully enough about what you're doing, about the decisions you make. Somebody, some people, somewhere, they decided to have a happy life is having such and such thing. To have a good life means having such and such thing. And you never seriously reflect upon those, you know, ideas that been imposed upon you. So you are conducting a life which is not yours, which is not yours. You did not own those ideas. You did not own those purposes. And therefore, this is not your real life. This life does not represent your true self. This life does not represent your true self. So, it means it is not creative. Now, if according to, based on the story of the Sisyphus life, there are three important elements that makes a life meaningless. Lack of purpose, lack of objective good or value, and lack of creativity. And if you add these three elements to a life, most likely you can expect to have a meaningful life. So, to summarize, I have to say, according to this view, the view I just explained, having a meaningful life means having a life that satisfies two conditions. You set a goal for your life. A meaningful life is a goal-oriented life. But not any kind of life. That life, that purpose, not any kind of purpose. That purpose must be objectively valuable. By objective value, I mean something which is good regardless of what you think and what you feel. Let me give you an example. Suppose being in pain, it's a subjective state of mind. If you feel you are in pain, you are in pain. It doesn't make any sense to say, look, I feel pain, but I'm not in pain. No, if you feel pain, you are in pain. So, being in the state of pain, it's a subjective state. And as soon as you feel it, you believe you are going through pain, you are actually in pain. Your feeling is enough to guarantee the truth of the fact that you're in pain. That's all you need to say the second one. But compare this one with different situation. Let's call it the situation of being healthy. This is an objective thing, being healthy. You might feel healthy, but feeling healthy is not enough to make you healthy. It happens all the time. You know, you feel healthy, but, you know, you're not. You know, you're sick, you know. I might have a cancer, but I feel good, you know, at least for a while. So, the state of being healthy is not a subjective state. It's objective. It means in order to be healthy, your body needs to satisfy some objective criteria which is independent, which are independent of what you feel or what you think or what you believe. When I say something is objectively good, I mean, look, regardless of what you think or what you feel, that thing is good. Like what? Let me give you something, some example of objectively bad thing. Suppose torturing a baby to death just for fun, right? It's bad. Who cares what you think? Who cares what you feel? Someone might say, look, there are people in the world who do such horrible things. Okay, so what? They are doing horrible things. The fact that some people believe or some people feel that, you know, torturing a baby to death just for fun is okay does not make it okay. The wrongness of this action is independent of what you feel or what you believe. It is wrong. If you think, if you feel it is good, it doesn't make it good. Right? Now, it's a very difficult question whether or not there are, how should we understand the concept of objective good? I don't want to get into that difficult philosophical question. So let me give you just a very simple example. It seems to me more or less everybody agrees that if we compare two lives, one is committed, a life which is devoted to crimes, you know, causing harm to other people, and compare this one with a life which is devoted to humanitarian activities, to help people, to be benevolent to other human fellow. If you compare these two lives, most of us believe the second one is better than the first one. And if someone says, look, the first one is better than the second one, you say, you're simply wrong, right? So it seems the goodness of the second state of affairs is independent of what, you know, those people feel or believe. In that general intuitive sense, we can say there are some states of affairs which are objective, which seems objectively better than other situations. If that's the case, then we can talk about objective good or objective bad. And what we need to have a meaningful life is a kind of objective goodness, something which is good not only to the person who conducts the life, but, you know, if you look at the situation from third person perspective, the situation seems to be good. And of course the third characteristic is a meaningful life, is a creative life, and conducting a meaningful life is like, you know, creating a piece of art. And as much as you are creative, to the extent that you are creative, your life would have more meaning. Okay. In the history of human beings and the history of, you know, debate on the question of meaning, we have three different models of how to understand the concept of meaning of life. The first model, probably is the oldest one. According to this model, there is a grand plan in this universe, and, you know, especially you can find this picture in religions. According to, for example, most religions in the world, there is a God. And God has a grand plan in this universe. And every creature in this world plays a part in this grand plan. If that's the case, according to this view, all human beings, they have a purpose in their lives. They are a part of grand plan. God created this plan. This is God's plan in this world. And assuming God is good, that plan is good. And the purpose of every individual's life is to accomplish that objectively good purpose. So whether or not you know it, there's a plan into your life, there's a purpose in your life. And whether or not you like it, that plan is, that purpose is objectively good, and you know, at least so far as these two conditions are concerned, to that extent your life has a meaning. But as you can see, there is a problem, two problems here. One problem, as I said, it seems a meaningful life is the one that you own it. You make the purpose of your own. Otherwise, it is difficult to call that kind of life meaningful. You need to some extent, understand what plan God has for you. What is the purpose of your life? And make it your own. It is not enough to say, I don't know what is the point of my life, but I'm sure God knows it. Probably you're right, but as it is not your purpose unless you can to some extent know it, believe it, make it your own choice, and knowingly and willingly to pursue that purpose. The second problem is, according to this view, the purpose is out there. Your life has a meaning, and you have to find it out. The meaning of life must be discovered. It is out there. It is complete. And all you need to know is to remind yourself, or try to remember, to know what plan God has for you. It's like this. Suppose the meaning of life is like a, you know, poem. According to this view, the meaning of every individual's life is a poem already being said. And all you need to know is to remember your own poem. So the sentence is there. The poem is there. And you need to just remember it. You have no role in creating that purpose. You have to discover it, and you have to follow it, you have to pursue it, and you have to accomplish it. That's all you can do. Lack of creativity. That's the very important defect in this picture. As I said, you can find this picture, you know, in most, among, you know, most religions. They assume the meaning is there, it's finished, it's completed, and you have to just discover it. As you know, in Plato, Plato believes, you know, knowing your purpose of life, knowing the plan of your life is remembering. You have to remember it. So it's all there. You have no role in creating it. You have to find it out. It's a kind of discovery. It's not a creative process. According to the second view, which is a kind of modern vision, it's presented by Nietzsche. Probably he was one of the most important defender of this view. According to Nietzsche and some of his followers, there is no such thing as meaning of life. All there is into it is you. And it all depends upon you. If you can create the meaning of your life, whatever you create, that's all there is into it. That's all you can get. The meaning of your life, it's entirely dependent upon you. If you can create it, you create it. If you cannot, you just fail. And it is completely out up to you. You can create anything you want. You know, Jean-Paul Sartre, a French philosopher, says, look, you can be anything you want. There is nothing impossible for you. And if you, for example, you have no legs, you can, you know, win a running race or something, you know, and if you cannot do it, it's your fault. And it means it is completely up to you how to create the meaning of your life. It is completely up to you. In other words, there is no pre-existed poem out there. You are the author from the very beginning, from scratch. You are the one who created this poem. So that's the second. This view seems a little bit extreme because there is no objectivity into it. It's very difficult to distinguish between, you know, and a good and bad, between value and disvalue. And it seems to me unrealistic because we live in this world and there are some limitations on our choices. And probably the best view to take, the best position to take is somewhere in between. To my understanding, creating a meaning of life is a combination of discovery and creation, both. Of course, we have to create the meaning of our lives. It's a creative process. So to that extent, I think Nietzsche is right. We must consider our lives as a piece of art, and we must become the author of this book, this novel, in which I'm the hero. But it doesn't mean I can do whatever I want. I can, you know, create whatever I want. There are some limitations. It's like an incomplete poem. There are some, you know, words, and I have to find the best word to complete it. Of course, if I'm creative enough, I can find the word which fits best here, and the result, the outcome is excellent, right? And if I'm not creative enough, you know, I will choose a lousy, you know, inaccurate, you know, word, and the result is not good. So to some extent, it is the outcome, the result of my creative activity. If I'm creative enough, you know, the word, this point, the sentence will turn out to be great. And if I'm not creative enough, of course, you know. But as I said, it is not entirely up to me. I'm restricted to some pre-existing structure, and I have to work in that limitation, in that framework. So in that framework I can be creative. So probably the combination of these two elements. So first, in order to find the meaning of your life, you need to know yourself. Self-knowledge is important. You need to know who you are. What is your true self? And you must be faithful to your true self. The purpose you will pick for your life, the purpose you set for your life, must be appropriate, must be fit in your true self. You cannot betray your true self. It must be your meaning of life, not anybody else's. That's one. But of course, if you are creative enough, you can create a masterpiece. And if you are not creative enough, of course, the result probably is not that satisfying. So, more or less, this is what I wanted to say about the concept of meaning of life. So, a meaningful life must have a purpose. The purpose must be objectively valuable, and of course, it must be your choice. It must be the result of creative act. And it doesn't mean you can do whatever you want. It doesn't mean you can do nothing. Something in between. You can create the meaning of your life in a certain, you know, there are some limitations on what you can and what you may do. Now let's talk about the second question. What is the relation between the meaning of life and happiness? Having a happy life, whether or not it guarantees having a meaningful life, or if you have a meaningful life, whether or not it is enough to make your life happy. In other words, whether or not having a meaningful life is necessary and sufficient condition for being happy, enjoy happiness, or vice versa, you might say having a enjoy happiness, is it whether or not it is sufficient and necessary condition for conducting a meaningful life. What is the connection, what is the relation between these two crucial concepts? In order to answer this question, I think it is important to explain, to know what we mean by happiness. As you may know, we have two general understanding, two different understanding of the concept of happiness. In modern time, I'm sure you all heard of utilitarianism. This is the dominant view in morality, in modern morality. According to utilitarianism, the right thing to do is to maximize total aggregate happiness. This kind of morality is defined on the basis of the concept of, on the basis of concept of happiness. So as you can see, in modern morality, the concept of happiness has been very important. And if you ask, for example, John Stuart Mill, who was advocating this view, what you mean by happiness, he will give you the definition of happiness which has been dominant in modern age for centuries. According to John Stuart Mill, by happiness we mean two things, pleasure and absence, lack of pain. This is what we mean by happiness. So as you can see, in modern mind, happiness has something, it's a kind of feeling, it's a mental state, and it's a pleasure. It means pleasure. Having fun, for example, it's one version of, you know, enjoying happiness. The element of that feeling, as I said, plays a very important role. This is called hedonism. According to hedonism, which is a value part of this morality, according to hedonism, the one and only thing which has intrinsic value is pleasure. Everything else, the value of everything else must be defined in terms of happiness. If something leads to pleasure, the one and only thing that has intrinsic value is pleasure. And if something leads to pleasure, to that extent that thing is valuable, and if it does not lead to happiness, it is worthless. It does not have any value. So we call it hedonism. In our culture, Hayyam is a great example of hedonism. The person who believes all there is into life is, you know, pleasure. We have to enjoy pleasure as much as we can, and that's all there is into life, and the rest is a waste. So, if by happiness we mean this, pleasure and lack of pain, and this is the only thing that has intrinsic value, of course I think it has nothing to do with the concept of meaning of life. Why? Because we can easily imagine a person who is very happy, but his life or her life has no meaning. For example, imagine a guy who is sitting in front of TV days after days, night after night. He drinks his beer, you know, and he watches a sitcom and do nothing else. He's happy. If you ask him, are you happy? He says, yes, that's the best life I want. You know, do nothing, you know, and watch, you know, TV and, you know, your cold beer. That's all there is into it. He might be really happy. It's possible that he sincerely says, I'm happy. But from third person perspective, it is difficult. It's extremely difficult to call that kind of life a meaningful life, even if he is happy. So being happy, it seems, does not guarantee having a meaningful life. You might have a happy life, but the life from objective perspective does not seem to be happy. Or imagine a mentally retarded person who enjoys, you know, watching cartoons, right? And he's happy, you know, anytime he sees, for example, Mickey Mouse, he jumps, you know, and says, shows, you know, expresses joy and being happy. But again, it is extremely difficult to call this kind of life a meaningful life. So, being happy by itself is not enough to make a life meaningful life. On the other hand, you can see many cases of life being considered as a meaningful life, which are not, you know, people who conduct those kinds of life, they are not happy. For example, let me give you an example. For many people in 20th century, Mother Teresa was a great example of having a meaningful life. She devoted her entire life to other people, helping other people. And to many people, her life was a great example of a meaningful life. But we know recently some of her private letters have been published. And based on those letters, we know she was an extremely unhappy woman. She was an extremely unhappy woman. She believed in what she was doing. She was, in a sense, was satisfied by what she was doing, but she was not happy. She was extremely sad. And most of the time, being happy blinds a person, some people, from seeing the meaninglessness of their lives. So, here's the question. Whether or not this concept of happiness is defensible. And I want to say, if by happiness we mean the hedonistic version of happiness, probably this is not the kind of happiness we should have in mind. Let me ask you a question, and actually I want to see what you think of it. This is an example presented by Robert Nozick, a great philosopher, contemporary philosopher. Robert Nozick says, look, imagine, just imagine, it's not true, but just imagine. Scientists, you know, they created a super advanced computer. And this computer can give you any experience you desire. In other words, this machine can stimulate your brain in such a way that you would think and feel, for example, you are a great novelist. If you desire to be a famous person, that machine, if you are connected to this machine, can create the illusion of being famous in your mind. Whatever you want. If you be connected to this machine, that machine can create it for you. Right, so that's the story. There's a machine here, it's a super advanced computer, and if you your brain is connected to this machine, if you plug yourself into this machine, that machine can create an illusion in your mind which seems to you as real, but of course it is not real. And it gives you whatever you want, whatever you desire. For example, you say, look, I want to be the greatest artist in the world. That machine can create that illusion in your mind. And you actually believe I'm the greatest you know, artist. You think you create so many different arts, you know, people admire you because of your art. And so on. Everything seems to you perfect, real. But of course, in fact, as a matter of fact, it is not real. Now, suppose the computer is here, and you have a choice. Say, look, here's the choice. One, you can decide, this is a question, whether or not you want to be connected to this machine. If you say yes, then it's forever, for lifetime. But of course, you're on your bed, these, you know, all these wires and so on, they're connected to your brains. On your bed, you think you're accomplishing so many great things. You know, you are, you know, a famous person, you are a successful person, you are the richest person, anything you want. Sometimes you say, look, I want some challenges in my life. That machine can create some challenges in your mind. None of them are real, but as soon as you are connected to the machine, you cannot see them as unreal, as illusion. They seem to you as reality, as real, right? Now, here's the question, and actually I want to know what you think of it. How many of you say, I would rather to be plugged into the machine? Of course, when you say yes and you're plugged into the machine, there is no way back. You have to, you know, stay in that situation. But as soon as you are plugged in the machine, you forget all about it. You know, you are in such a situation and you consider everything you experience as real. Now, may I ask how many of you would prefer to be connected to the machine? Please raise your hand. Okay. So you guys don't have a happy life. How many of you say, I'm not going to be plugged into this machine. I don't like it. Please raise your hand. Okay, so as you can see, most of you think, even if my life is difficult, even if, you know, it has upside down, but at least it is my life, you know, and I don't want to spend my life with an illusion. Even if, you know, when I'm plugged into the machine, I don't know it. Now, let me change the example and see whether or not people who said they are good, they like to be connected to the machine, whether or not their intuition would be changing. Now, imagine Mr. X. Mr. X is going to die. At the very end, he thinks about his life and says, wow, such a lucky, such a happy life. I had a very faithful woman in my life, my wife. I had great friends who loved me. And I had great colleagues who admired me, who respected me. Such a happy life. I'm happy. And he died. Before he get to the point of death, the amount of happiness, that pleasure he experienced from thinking about his life, suppose it's 100 units. Right? That was the amount of pleasure he experienced at that point. And he's gone. This is Mr. X. Now imagine Mr. Z. Mr. Z is in a similar situation. Before he dies, he thinks to himself, wow, such a good life I've had, such a happy life. My wife was faithful to me. My friends, you know, they loved me. And my colleagues, they respected me. It was amazing. And when, suppose you measure the amount of happiness, the amount of pleasure he experienced at that moment, and it was at that point, and it was 100 points, right? Same amount of happiness, and he died. But Mr. Z's life was a little bit different, because as a matter of fact, his wife was not faithful to him. He was cheating on him behind his back. And his friend, they just hated him, but they just pretended that they loved him. And, you know, his colleagues, they made fun of him, you know, behind his back. But he didn't know it, you know. So the amount of pleasure he experienced before his death was the same as the other one. Now, let me ask you this. How many of you would like to be in Mr. X's place? Raise your hand. Mr. X, the first one. Okay. How many of you would rather to be in place of Mr. Z? Raise your hand. The second. Mr. Z. How many of you think there is no difference between them? Okay. Now, people who say there is no difference between them. Suppose this is a moment of creation, right? And God says, look, I can give you a choice. The first situation is the situation of Mr. X. And the second situation is the situation of Mr. C. Which one would you prefer to be, Mr. X or Z? Why? Of course, when you are Mr. X or Z, you don't know the difference. But now you can make the decision. Now, again, God asked you, which one would you rather to be, Mr. X or Z? Now, how many of you, again, believe there's no difference? Okay. Okay, so you guys believe, you know, it's okay for your, you know, spouses, you know, cheat on you as long as you don't know. That's what you're saying. Okay. Now, of course, you know, we have to talk about it. These are, you know, interesting examples. But there is one thing for sure. People who didn't vote for Mr. Z, or people who believed there's a difference between these two situations, they are saying pleasure is not all that matters. People who say we are not going to be plugged in that experience machine, they are saying pleasure is not all that matters. Because if pleasure was the one and only thing that matters in our lives, as some of you say, there should be no difference between Mr. Z and X. But some of you, most of you, felt intuitively something is fishy in Mr. Z's life. And if we have a choice, we would rather to be the first one rather than the second one, right? Even if I don't know it, but I would rather to be the one who experienced the real happiness, not the illusion of happiness, right? People who say we are not going to be plugged into the machine, they say, look, I want happiness, but I'm looking for real happiness. The happiness I actually earned it. It's a result of my real, you know, activities. And I actually achieved it. You know, I don't want to lay on the back, on a bed, you know, and in my dreams, you know, and, you know, I'd be successful. I would rather to be, you know, the level of my success might be lower than that, but at least it is mine. I achieved it. Anyway. If that's your intuition, at least to many of you seems to be the case, then you are not hedonist. You're saying, look, pleasure is important, of course, you know, we like to, you know, enjoy our lives, we like to have fun, but there are some other things in our lives. Now, let me give you another example. Suppose there's a committee of super intelligent people. They can make the best decision for people's life. They have a company, you know. And they offer the you know, they are in the market and they say, look, here's the thing. We can make all your decisions, and you're extremely intelligent people, and we can make the best decision for your life. So if you listen to us and you know, hire us, we make the best decision for your life. But as soon as you sign the contract, you have to follow what we say. You have no choice. We tell you who must be your friends. We tell you what kind of, you know, career choice you need to make. We tell you the best, but you have no choice. If we say you should do it, you should do it. In other words, you have to give up your freedom, you have to give up your autonomy, and, you know, as a result of it, you would be happy, because, you know, we make the best decisions for you. Now, how many of you, you know, are ready to give up your autonomy, your freedom, to, you know, hire these people? Raise your hand if you say it. What's that? Yeah, it is for free. Yeah. Okay.
We did it 29 years ago. Like, we did it.
So, again, would you please explain it? Your view.
All of us want to do that. You know, really?
Okay.
We all love to live our lives. You know, someone else making the decisions. We just don't want to consciously make the decision to give them the power. We want someone else to have the power. We just don't want to.
And why we don't want it? If we
want the illusion of you don't actually want control, you want to think you have control.
Okay. So now, why is that so? If pleasure is the only thing that matters, why should I care about my autonomy? Even its illusion, why it is important to me?
Sure, that's my point.
okay, we shouldn't, what we are. And here's the question, why? The answer seems to be, at least for most of us, at least on the surface, we assume pleasure is not the only thing that matters in human life. Autonomy is important, knowledge is important, and some other thing. But I'm not saying, you know, I'm not going to take any sides. What I'm trying to say is this. At least to many of us, intuitively, pleasure is not the one and only thing that matters, right? And if that's the case, hedonism is not, to many of us, it's not a valid point of view to take, right? Let me put it in terms of a conditional statement. For those of you who believed, who said we are not going to be plugged into experience machine, for those of you who said we don't want to be in Mr. Z's place, for those of you who said I'm not going to hire those people, for you, at least to you, hedonism is false. That's the implication of your vote. You have to say we don't want hedonism. Pleasure is good, having fun is good, but we believe there are other things that matter in human life. Reality, enjoying something, real happiness is important. Having autonomy to make my own decisions and to make my own, you know, mistakes is important to us as much as pleasure. Now, I just wanted to say, you know, this concept of happiness, which is dominated in, you know, in modern life, dominated modern mind, has some difficulties, and if we think about it, probably we have to rethink about it, and probably it's not as plausible it might seem. Okay, so that's the first concept, first meaning of happiness. In this, according to this view, according to hedonism, happiness at the end, it's a feeling. It's a positive mental feeling, we call it pleasure. And if that's what you mean by happiness, then this concept of happiness has nothing to do with the question of meaning of life. You might be happy in this sense, but it doesn't mean necessarily that you are conducting a meaningful life. Okay, so let's talk about the second sense of happiness. This concept of happiness presented by Aristotle, and then in Iranian Islamic culture and in Christianity, they followed, you know, Aristotle's step. According to this second concept of happiness, the concept of happiness, actually, the happiness is not an accurate word for the Greek word eudaimonia. The Greek word eudaimonia probably is being translated as happiness, but probably it's better to be translated as flourishing. This concept of happiness is based on the notion of virtue, the notion of goodness. A eudaimonia is a state in which our character becomes virtuous. We acquire virtues and we become good people. So, according to this view, happiness, if we translate it loosely, means become a good person. Recognize virtues and try to cultivate those virtues in our characters. Of course, the concept of eudaimonia, it doesn't mean, you know, it has something against pleasure, but as I said, it's a different concept. Here, eudaimonia is not a feeling, contrary to pleasure, which is a feeling. Eudaimonia, or flourishing, it's activity, something you need to do, a kind of lifestyle you need to conduct, you know, a virtuous life, and, you know, to remove vices from your character, your life, and become a good person in a moral sense of view. So, of course, we have to say a lot about this concept of virtue, but since it is not, you know, the talk is not about the concept of happiness and it's not about the concept of virtue and virtue ethics, I just want to just mention this concept. According to the second view, The concept of happiness is not something subjective. The concept of pleasure, happiness as pleasure, is a subjective view. It is something you feel. It's like pain. If you feel pain, you are in pain, and there is no room to make any mistake, right? It's a subjective concept. But happiness, in second sense, is an objective sense. If you are happy, in objective sense, you are happy. And if you are not happy, if you do not satisfy some objective criteria, you are not happy, even if you feel good about yourself. It's a kind of activity, as I said. If that's what you mean by happiness, then of course you can see there is a close connection between the concept of meaning of life and the concept of happiness. Why? Because you remember meaningful life means having a purpose, and that purpose must be objectively good. And according to Aristotle, whether or not he is right, but according to Aristotle, a happy life, in a second sense, means to conduct your life, to aim your life to the goal of good, becoming a good person, and having a virtuous character. And so you have a purpose, that purpose, by definition, seems to be good, and if you have to be creative, you have to be actively involved in creating that kind of life. And if that's the case, more or less, the concept of eudaimonia requires having a meaningful life, if that definition is true. Let me say one last thing, and then I will finish and let you go. According to theism, they believe if there is a God, there is a meaning into life, human's life. And since they believe there is a God, and they believe, okay, human's life has a meaning. But remember, it is extremely difficult for people of faith, people of religion, to claim that people who do not believe in God, they cannot have a meaningful life. You cannot say that. You might say God can be a source of meaning of life, but from that you cannot draw the conclusion that if you do not believe in God, or if there is no God, there is no other sources for meaning of life. So, theistic view of meaning of life could be true, but from that fact you cannot draw the conclusion that there are no other sources for meaning of life. I myself believe we have to separate the question of meaning of life and the question of the existence of God. It doesn't mean if you believe in God, it does not help you to have a certain meaning or to contribute to having your meaningful life. But it doesn't mean, as I said, if you do not believe in God, your life is meaningless. There is no point into your life. If you believe, you can set a purpose for your life, and if that purpose is objectively good, and you own it, it is your choice, then your life is meaningful to that extent, even if you do not believe in God, even if there is no God. So, probably we have to defend a non-theistic approach of the meaning of life, according to which there is no close connection. The existence of God is not necessary and sufficient condition for having a meaningful life. On the other hand, some people in modern time, they claim if there is no God, there is no meaning into life. And since there is no God, there is no meaning into life. They believe life is meaningless. And still, again, I think it's a hasty conclusion. As I said, they share the assumption that there is a close connection between the existence of God and meaningful life. To my understanding, there is no such logical connection between these two concepts. You can have a meaningful life whether or not you believe in God. Okay, thank you very much.